Welcome to the Cat Clayton Mysteries. Do you enjoy mystery novels? Are you in the mood for some small town shenanigans? Or maybe you're on a road trip and looking for something to listen to. Either way, I am glad that you've tuned in. Think Murder, She Wrote, mixed with Legally Blonde in small town Texas. So, sharpen those sleuthing skills and let's solve some mysteries. Try to say that 5 times real fast. Oh, and a disclaimer. Like the dog in the books, my Chihuahua, Cuff, likes to be heard. And since he sits in my lap while I record, you may hear occasional puppy whining, a yip, or other doggy noises. Now, get cozy, and let me tell you a few stories. Dear listeners, my sincere apologies for not getting Chapter 8 out on time this week. We're just going to say that the weather here in Texas did not cooperate and was not conducive to recording the podcast. So I let it slide. Also, I'm recording most of this chapter with the real Cuff perched in my lap and the rest of the family home downstairs. So please excuse any extra noises that you may hear in the background. When we ended Chapter 7 last week, Steely had followed the mysterious black car out of town. She suspects that the driver is both responsible for the double murder and the bank robbery that happened that day. The black car leads her straight to Nick's house, where she's living, and he leaves a threatening note for her to back off or else. Also remember that Nick refused to show up when Steely and Cuff had discovered Mrs. Shermack's body back at the shop. Let's see what happens next. How to Leash a Thief, a Steely and Cuff Mystery, Book 1, Chapter 8. The tension in the kitchen escalated as soon as I pulled open the sliding glass door. "Why did you deliberately disregard me and go to the burn site?" Nick asked. "Please don't start. It's been a long day," I said, setting my car keys and bag on the kitchen table. I let the dogs outside, and without so much as a blink said, "And I'm fine. Thanks for asking." I couldn't hold back the sarcasm. "Did you mention to Becker I believe the murders and bank robbery might be related?" "Oh, and I also informed Officer Jackson he should talk with Mr. Peters."
"I told you to stay out of this."
He scowled, his nostrils flaring. "Again, did you go to the burn site today?" "Obviously, you know I did. Daniel and I went to check things out. We're trying to find poor Samson's dog. What's the big deal?" I asked. "And why didn't you go up there if you knew I found Flora dead?"
"I was busy." He pounded the countertop with both fists. "Jesus, Steely, Flora Shermack was strangled, and you're standing here asking me what the big deal is? You are unbelievable. The perp knows who you are. What if he knows where you live, too? Huh? Then what?"
"Yeah, so it's probably not a good time for me to tell him that the killer left a note in our mailbox," I thought. "I'm fine. Look, nothing's broken," I said, wiggling my fingers.
"This isn't a time to be cute. You know what your major malfunction is?"
"You don't think." Sounding like a freight train, he blew out a hot breath. And it may have been my imagination, but it appeared that steam leaked straight from his ears. I ignored his narcissism and attempted to smooth things over. "Hey, we both need a break. For a few hours, let's forget today ever happened and go to dinner." Oh no, dinner. "Nick, in all the craziness, I forgot to pick up salad makings," I admitted. Something moved out of the corner of my eye. Cuff and Trigger pressed their noses against the smudged sliding glass door, both wagging their tails. I crossed the room, slid the door open, and the dogs bounded inside. Cuff nipped at Trigger's heels.
"Ooh, I miss this big dude, Chiquita."
Nick snatched his keys from the counter, refusing to make eye contact with me.
Well, I figured as much. "Don't worry. Kaylee said that she'd take care of everything." He fetched dog treats from the pantry and tossed them on the floor to Trigger and Cuff. I didn't like his tone, but I didn't want to press the issue any further. Times like this, I needed to keep my pie hole shut. Speaking of pie, I retrieved the leftover pie from Baker's Bliss from the refrigerator, said a few kind words about Mrs. Shermack to myself, grabbed my purse from the table, and headed for the sliding glass door. I refused to look back in Nick's direction. "I'm ready when you are," I said.
"We'll be back later, boys. Go lay down. And be good, Cuff," Nick said.
I glanced down at my pup. With the treat clamped between his teeth, he rumbled a little growl.
"Nobody talks to my Chiquita that way."
And in a no-talk-to-the-butt exit, he trotted down the hallway. I heard him grumbling about peeing on Nick's work boots. I climbed into the truck and stole a glance at Nick. He gripped the steering wheel, his knuckles turning white as he jerked the truck into motion and barreled down the driveway. When we'd first met back at Christmas, the attraction between us made us both see stars. We couldn't get enough of each other. But lately, everything seemed, well, off. I didn't know what or why, but something was definitely wrong. Three glasses of wine later, I realized I hadn't eaten all day. Not good. The wine went straight to my brain and mouth. Deep in the pit of my rumbling stomach, a tantrum simmered as I listened to Kaylee Tripp preaching about how to be a proper cop's wife. "And you know, I love you like a little sister," she said with a disapproving look. She went on about being my old babysitter when I was younger and being Stoney's best friend, but I blocked her voice out. 5 years older and married to a cop for 4 years, Kaylee, dutiful and dedicated, had a firm grip on the life of a cop's wife. And since I thought Nick might pop the question soon, I should really use this as a learning opportunity. I patted the mouth of my wine tumbler. "More wine, please." Kaylee raised an eyebrow as she gave me a refill. "Glass number 4. Some might call that a bottle."
"Well, it's plain awful what had happened to Flora. I can't believe she's gone. What will we do without her yummy creations at Baker's Bliss?" she asked.
"I know, it's awful. I will really miss her pies. Ooh, I hoped I didn't say that last part out loud." I studied Kaylee's face. It appeared that the pie comment had only been in my head.
"I mean, it's all so surreal. I bet you were downright petrified today when that bank robber shot at you. I can't believe this is all happening in our quiet little community."
She shook her head, the blonde flat iron mane glistening. Kaylee was everything I wasn't. Tall, a bodacious D-cup, piercing, icy blue eyes, and curvy in all the right places. Compared to her, I felt like a brown-eyed, red-headed tree sapling.
"Sugar, I know that you think you're helping and all, but it is best for our kind to stay out of these things."
Our kind? I wondered if Nick had insisted on this dinner date so that Kaylee could work her wifely charms on me. The possibility of the three of them working against me ticked me off royally.
"Well, I'm not like you."
Then, to continue spewing wine-induced ugliness, I added, "Besides, Nick knew I wasn't the quiet, submissive type when he met me." Her smile faded, and she made her way over to the stove. With a pair of oven mitts, she pulled out a sizzling roast, causing my mouth to water. "Dinner's done," she flashed me a big Texas grin. "We'll let the meat rest for 5 minutes while I finish setting the table. You just sit there and relax." I traced the mouth of my wine glass with a finger as I gathered enough nerve to ask what I'd been dying to know. "Kaylee, did Nick bring me over here so that you could talk some sense into me?" The look on her face confirmed my suspicions. "Look, darling,
Nick is getting a lot of flack over this. She poured herself a glass of wine and sat down on a stool across from me. The veins in my neck pulsed and my ears burned. Officer Jackson let it slip to Becker that you were poking around where the murder took place last night, and the chief isn't happy. I set my wine glass on the counter so that I wouldn't hurl it across the kitchen. I had figured Jackson reported it, but I hoped that Nick wouldn't get any backlash for my actions. First, it is my building. I wasn't poking around. And I can't believe the guy would do this to Nick. They were in the Marines together. Don't they have some sort of brotherly code or something? Gosh, he had to know that Chief Becker would freak out. My blood boiled. Outside, Nick and Brandon had their heads together in a serious conversation. A grim look plagued Nick's handsome face. Reality had settled in. I'd caused that look. Staley, I can't speak for Officer Jackson, but Brandon says the guy is high-strung, and apparently between his two tours overseas, he was dumped. I'm sure that he has damaged goods in more ways than one. I'd steer clear of him. But Sugar, you need to keep out of this, for Nick's sake, she said. She fiddled with the gold band on her left ring finger. Well, it must be nice to be so perfect, I thought. I counted to 10 before speaking. Thanks for the advice. I tried not to slur. With a woozy head, I knew the wine definitely had a hold of me. My cheeks burned, and hot lava bubbled in my stomach, waiting to erupt. Well, I just thought you ought to know, she said with a sugary smile. Let's call the guys in so that we can eat. I didn't trust myself not to say something I'd regret, so I kept quiet, just nodding to the others when I thought it was appropriate. I made it all the way through the meal without an incident until Kaylee served the pie. Brandon made the mistake mentioning Officer Jackson's name, and the volcano exploded. I pointed a finger at Brandon. You know, if you're such a great friend, one would think that you would have Nick's back. The words were already out before I could slip a muzzle on my mouth. Well, there's no taking it back now, I thought, and slugged back the remaining wine in my glass. Kaylee's mouth gaped open. Her pie-packed fork froze halfway to her mouth. Wide-eyed and obviously in shock, Brandon remained quiet. Nick set his fork down. He removed the cloth napkin from his lap and wiped his mouth. That'll do on the wine, Steely. He spoke in a clear tone as he reached over and rested a hand on mine. No, really, Brandon. I mean, what were you thinking letting Officer Jackson rat on me last night? Why didn't you stop him? I ripped my hand out from under Nick's and slammed it on the table. The dishes and glasses rattled. My head spun in circles. Anyone for coffee? Kaylee asked in a mousy voice. I picked up a bag of savory snickerdoodle. Nobody wants freaking coffee. So why don't we discuss where Brandon's loyalties lie? I stood, shoving my chair back. It toppled over, crashing to the floor. I almost timbered along over with it. Damn wine. Oh, just forget it. I want to go home. My eyes filled with tears, anger seething from every pore. I'm not a big drinker, but when I do, it never ends well. Everyone else remained in their seats, mouths gaped open, eyes peeled on me. You could have heard a flea burp in the room. The glaring kitchen lights killed my throbbing head. I swayed, the room spinning around me. Grabbing the table, I steadied myself. Nick jumped up, circling around the table to me. He wrapped his arms around me, giving me a tight squeeze, and not in a cozy, romantic way. I'm sorry, guys. It looks like we've had too much wine to drink tonight. I pulled out of his grasp. Don't be so patronizing. Anger flickered in Nick's eyes, the corner of his mouth twitching. I pursed my lips and stuck my nose in the air. Kaylee popped out of her chair as the front door burst open and the sound of squealing children punctured my eardrums. I swayed. Or the room moved. I didn't know which.
Nick made his move, grabbing my arm. Let's go. Brandon, Kaylee, my apologies. He marched me to the front door, passing the children and Kaylee's parents. He steered me out the door, ushered me to the truck, and opened my door with a stern look. Get in. Although neither of us said a word on the drive home, the tension screamed between us. By the time he pulled up to the house and killed the engine, my drunken anger had switched gears, shifting into exhaustion. All I wanted to do was to crawl into bed. What was that back there? His voice boomed in my head. I shrugged, staring out the passenger window. It's been a rough day. And I got so mad when Kaylee told me that you'd gotten grief over what I did last night. And then the wine. I don't know. I guess I flipped out. I'll say. Nick ran a hand through his dark hair, letting out an exaggerated breath. He leaned forward, resting his head on the steering wheel. I half expected him to bang his head in frustration. Well, for what it's worth, I'm sorry, Nick. I folded my hands in my lap, shivering. The icy air blasting from the vents caused my skin to break out in goosebumps. Tears bubbled up, spilling over onto my cheeks. There was no stopping them. I'd really screwed up. Not only did I mess up things for Nick at work, but now I defended his best friend and his wife. Well, I should have told you myself, Nick said. I could have prepared you. He spoke to the roof of the truck, eyes closed. I should have known that you'd be irrational when you heard that Jackson told Becker. I know how you can be.
Irrational? And how I can be? Ugh, it burned me up when he was right, but I did have a tendency to blow crap out of proportion.
Regardless of what Jackson did, and the fact Nick had kept it from me, I was way out of line for ridiculing Brandon and offending Kaylee.
I guess I overreacted, I said.
He scoffed, cutting his eyes at me and pulling the keys out of the ignition. You guess? Well, I'm done here.
He got out of the truck and slammed the door.
Nick left the nightly chores of feeding the dogs and letting them out up to me. I went through the motions and got ready for bed, only to find him already asleep. I crawled into bed wanting to wake him so that we could talk, but lost my nerve the longer I lay there. What had he meant when he said, I'm done here? Was he finished with the discussion or done with me? I couldn't help but feel the cold gap between us widening, not only in our bed, but in our lives. Before I dozed off, Cuff wheezed from the floor beneath us.
Ooh, my poor Chiquita.
Well, at least someone felt sorry for me. I rose early to find Nick's side of the bed empty. He must have had errands to run, or he was avoiding me. I figured it was probably the latter. My head pounded from a killer hangover. I rolled over and checked my phone. A text from Officer Jackson had come through at 3:42 a.m. We'll need to keep the shop sealed off today. Not finished. Sorry for any inconvenience. Chief promises business can resume as normal tomorrow, unless you hear otherwise. I sent Daniel a quick text explaining what had happened and to cancel the day's clients. Then I sent another group text and rescheduled our citizens on the watch meeting. Swallowing two ibuprofen, I turned my phone on silent and crawled back into bed where I stayed all day. Nick never showed up, and he ignored all my text messages. In the morning, I checked my phone. There was no text or call from the police department, and I assumed that all was well. No return texts from Nick, and I had missed 3 calls from Pop. I pulled his number up and put the call on speaker. Steely, you okay? I tried calling, but you wouldn't pick up. I got a hold of Nick, and he said that you were home resting. I got worried.
I'm fine, really. Well, it's nice to know that Nick at least had the courtesy to respond to my father, I thought.
I can't believe we've had 2 murders and a bank robbery, Pop said. Back in my day, as the chief, this would have never happened.
Probably not, because you're the best.
Damn straight. But I'm concerned about you. I don't like the fact the murder victims were at the shop. Tell me you're planning on shutting down and taking some time off.
Pop, you know I can't do that. We'll lose too much money, and I don't want to jeopardize the business. I can't let Gertie down. I won't.
My grandmother was counting on me. I refused to let the shop suffer. If the investigation had wrapped up, I was running business as usual.
You know you're as stubborn as that old woman, don't you?
Pop, is that any way to talk to your own daughter? Or about your mother? He chuckled on the other end of the line. Besides, I'm sure I get my tenacity from you. Now, don't you worry, I'm fine, and I'm going into work. I'll see you later this evening for the COW meeting. Love you.
Love you too, Steels, he said before disconnecting the call.
Your pop is a good man, Chiquita.
Cuff sat on his haunches, peering up at the bed.
I know. I'm a lucky girl, I said. I made the bed and tidied the room in case Nick came home during the day. I thought it was important for him to come home to a clean space. I showered and dressed in a black tank top adorned with a sequined dog paw print, denim cut-off jean shorts, and my spiked camo boots. The boots were a little overkill, but I didn't care. I ran some gel through my hair and we hit the road. When Cuff and I arrived at the shop, the front waiting room appeared normal. The crime unit did an excellent job of cleaning up, like nothing had ever happened. I shuddered, staring at the row of chairs against the window. One was missing. Evidence. Cuff sniffed the floor.
Smells clean to me.
Well, that's a relief, I replied, and headed to my office. The moment my butt hit the desk chair, Daniel burst through the back door and rushed in. He was in full-blown panic. His arms flailed and he spit and sputtered as he thrust the Buckleville banner under my nose.
Read this!
I scanned over the front page announcing Mrs. Shermack's murder. It featured a street view image of Scrubbidub.
Yeah, I figured we'd make the headline.
Daniel thumped the paper.
Keep reading.
His voice spiked a few octaves higher than usual. Skimming the brief article under a photo of Mrs. Shermack, I found what had Daniel in a tizzy.
Even though the Buckleville PD doesn't consider Miss Lamar a suspect at this time.
Yeah, the reporter went there. Sheesh. I glanced up at Daniel, shrugging. I'm not worried. They know I didn't murder her, I said.
But this is so bad for business, he said.
Calm down. It's all good.
Our friend is not good, Chiquita. Look at him. I think he might be choking.
Huffing and puffing, Daniel clutched his chest and collapsed at my feet.
You totally don't get it. We've already had two cancellations via text on my cell this morning. The shop is a murder scene. We will lose customers.
What if Chief Becker finds out that I was at the burn site too?
Oh my gosh, what if they accuse me of killing her?
He stuck his head between his knees, gulping air. I refrained from admitting that I'd already confessed to Jackson that Daniel had been with me at the burn site. No reason to push him over the edge. Cuff peeked up from his bed.
But Daniel makes some good points, Chiquita.
Leaning against my legs, Daniel gasped.
Oh dear, this is plain awful.
What am I supposed to do, Cuff? I thought. I don't know the first thing about handling a man in a frenzy.
Just pet him, Chiquita.
I reached down and patted Daniel's head, but he continued to pout. So I grabbed the feather duster hanging on the wall near my desk and walloped him over the head.
Get a hold of yourself. If we were suspects, we'd be down at the station right now.
Daniel gazed up at me, blinking. A speckled brown and white feather clung to his perfect wavy hair.
You think?
I reached down and tweaked his chin, his baby blues brimming with tears. I plucked the feather and tossed it into the trash can.
I don't think. I know.
I traded the feather duster for an unopened bill from my desktop and fanned myself. The two cancellations weren't exactly going to help our financials.
We should make a list of suspects, and then we can give it to Nick, I said.
Good thinking, Chiquita.
Cuff rested his muzzle on my paws and watched us.
Okay, Daniel said, standing. That's a great idea.
He dashed to the front lobby and retrieved the upright folding chalkboard. We usually write a love your dog quote. He wiped it clean and grabbed the white chalk stick from its holder.
Okay, who's first?
Well, let's start with Samson's friend we saw arguing with Mr. Peters yesterday, Banjo. Write his name down, I said. One eyebrow inched up towards Daniel's hairline.
His name's Banjo?
Yes. Daniel wrote the name down.
Okay, who's next?
What about that tall drink of water, the walk-in from yesterday?
Yeah, just a second. We'll get to Seth Welton, I said. I thought back to the night of Samson's murder and hearing the blunt force trauma to the head comment on the scanner.
Let's think about this, Daniel. Samson was hit over the head with a large object, something big and hard enough to kill him. And we know that Banjo carries an actual banjo, hence his nickname. Maybe he and Samson had an argument and Banjo lost control and hit him over the head.
Daniel jotted down the details.
But if this Banjo character and Samson were friends, I really don't think it was him.
I'm thinking Seth Welton, Daniel said.
Me too, Chiquita.
All right, write his name down, I said. But he seems so nice. And he owns a Yorkie.
People who have Yorkies can't be bad, can they?
Well, I've never heard that one, Daniel said, going back to the suspect list.
He talked aloud as he wrote the details. Seth Welton, newcomer to town, strong, broad-shouldered, super hot. Glimpsing over at me, he shrugged.
Okay, that's all I've got.
I raised an eyebrow at Daniel's last details.
Well, I'm gonna let the strong slide, but broad-shouldered and super hot have nothing to do with his means, opportunity, or motivation to murder someone.
Okay, then who else? Daniel asked.
I picked up the paper and tapped the front page. Mr. Sharmack.
Flora's husband?
Yes. I saw them arguing in town last week, and she told me that business was down. Their big oven broke, and they were having major financial issues, I said. I tried recalling the details from our conversation. Mr. Sharmack sometimes cuts hay out of the Hollick farm, so he'd have a reason to be out of the same pasture we found blood and the bandana bow. Do you think that he'd kill his own wife?
Daniel's blue eyes widened.
Well, I don't think so.
But maybe?
He jotted down the details as I rattled them off, pacing back and forth.
Well, if he was desperate enough, I think he could, I said. It was definitely plausible.
I hear the surviving spouse is oftentimes a suspect when a murder occurs.
Well, physically, the man is capable. Although I'd never considered Mr. Sharmack a violent man, but how well did I really know him?
And the man makes pie for a living. Pie makers can't be killers.
I left my thoughts unstated.
But I heard it, Chiquita. And just because the man bakes pie doesn't mean he didn't do it.
I looked sideways at my pup.
Okay, fine. You're right, Cuff.
All right, Daniel. How can we tie Mr. Sharmack in with Samson's murder?
Daniel shrugged.
Okay, then let's table it for now. In the meantime, I'll get these names to Nick, and it'll eliminate me from any suspicion. If there is any. Our business will pick back up.
You'll see, I said, hoping Nick would listen.
Daniel took Cuff for a walk while I ordered shampoos and took care of some billing. I called Nick to let him know the names that Daniel and I had come up with. I also texted Kaylee and asked her out to lunch. She agreed to meet me, thank goodness, because I needed to make amends. Not only had I known her for almost all my life, she was one of the only female friends I had. I had to fix this, even if I had to beg for her forgiveness. Cuff and Daniel returned. The walk had been good for Daniel. He waltzed in wearing a huge grin. Maybe he'd bumped into the UPS man in town. I informed him of my lunch plans. So I had too much wine the other night, and, well, my evil twin showed up. So I need to make things right.
Girl, what have I told you about letting her out in public? He was back to his usual perky self. He grinned, pinching my chin. I chuckled. But for real, I yelled at Brandon and said some terrible, awful things. I know I hurt Kaylee's feelings. I acted like a spoiled brat. Daniel scrunched up his nose. Well, how did Nick react? Oh, as expected. He apologized and removed me from the situation. But not only did I shame him in front of Kaylee and Brandon, it seems I've gotten him in trouble at work. I wonder how much more Nick is going to be able to put up with, I thought. Daniel eyed me. Do you think lunch is a good idea? Maybe it's too soon? No, I have to fix this now. Maybe if I patch things up with Kaylee, Nick will come around. I haven't seen him since the night before last, and he's not answering my calls or my texts. I had a bad feeling about Nick not answering my messages.
He is probably livid, Chiquita.
I glanced down at Cuff. I know. Nick's behavior was peculiar, but I owed it to myself to work it out. You mean he didn't come home last night? Daniel asked. I shook my head. Oh, dear. Daniel scooped Cuff up into his arms. Well, this little guy can hang with me. I'm dining in today. Oh, and I was so upset earlier, I forgot to tell you. Killer ensemble you have on there. He licked a finger and touched my hip, making the putting out a flame sound and laughed. In the front lobby, Daniel held Cuff in one hand and the front door open with the other. So you never said, are you okay after finding her last night? Mrs. Shermack, I mean? I stepped out into the hot July sunshine, letting it warm my skin. I hadn't had a lot of time to process how I felt about finding her body, or the killer singling me out and threatening me. I slid my sunglasses down off my head and over my eyes, turning back toward Daniel. Well, it was terrifying. To be honest, I feel somewhat responsible for her death. What do you mean? Daniel asked, wearing a befuddled expression. Well, maybe if I'd told Flora everything I knew the other morning, she wouldn't have gone out looking on her own. The ugly truth was I shared nothing with her because I didn't want her helping solve the murder. I wanted to do it alone, and that made me feel worse. Steely, I think what's important here is that it could have been you the other night, Daniel said. I sucked in a breath.
My sentiments exactly. Your interfering may get you killed, Chiquita.
Well, why don't you just say what's really on your mind, Cuff?
I just did.
But when it really got down to the nitty-gritty, they both were right. What happened to Florek could have happened to me. Admitting it was like a smack in the face. Tears sprung up and I squeezed my lids shut to keep them from spilling out, thankful for the concealment of my sunglasses. Steely, it's okay to be scared, Daniel said. I'm fine. I can tell that you're crying behind those sunglasses. Daniel pulled me in for a tight hug. Cuff yelped.
You two are squishing me!
I'll survive, Daniel. I tried convincing myself as I returned Daniel's hug. I have to go or I'm going to be late for lunch. Daniel stepped back, setting a wiggling Cuff down, and took my hand in his. Flora Shermack's murder is not your fault, but you need to be more careful. I am here when you need to talk. Now, drop those tears and go patch things up with Kaylee. Thanks. Wish me luck. I squeezed his hand and turned on my heels, leaving them behind. It worried Daniel. I can't say I blamed him. The situation worried me too. But I had one stop before lunch. I made a quick beeline for Baker's Bliss. A clothes sign hung in the window, the interior lights off. I peered in through the glass. Cute round tables with small vases of artificial flowers adorned the eatery. A pang of guilt struck my heart. I'm so sorry, Flora.
Excuse me?
A male voice said from behind me.
Why are you sorry?
I whirled to find a disheveled Mr. Shermack standing right behind me, hands dangling at his sides. Oh, hi, Mr. Shermack. I'm very sorry for your loss. I studied him closely.
Uh-huh, he said. He looked as if he'd slept in his khakis and white t-shirt, his salt and pepper facial hair in desperate need of a razor. He moved past me and checked the front door. I just needed to make sure that we were all locked up. Guess Bliss will be closed for, well, I'm not even sure if we're ever going to be open, he said. The thought of Baker's Bliss never reopening saddened me. The town would have to depend on Orsak's for good pie. And the town would miss spunky Miss Shermack and her delicious gossip. Well, if you need anything, please let us know, I said. And I really hope that you'll be able to reopen the bakery someday soon. I tried to be as tactful as possible with the next question. Can I ask you about 2 nights ago?
What do you mean?
On the evening of our night janitor Samson's murder. I drove by and saw the lights on here. Were y'all working late? Maybe y'all saw something. His bloodshot eyes squinted at me, and anger flashed across his face.
You have a lot of nerve, Missy. My wife is dead, and you're bothering me about your janitor? Well, not that it's any of your business, but I was here that evening trying to repair our commercial oven. It's kaput. A new one will cost me an arm and a leg, he said, his voice hoarse.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. I swallowed hard. I recalled Flora saying that they'd fought terrible over money issues. Well, did she have life insurance? Maybe that will help matters.
Tears welled up in his eyes and spilled down his cheeks. Our problems are none of your concern. Now, if you don't mind, I've got a funeral to plan.
He turned and stormed away. I pedaled my feet down the sidewalk as fast as I could go. I considered the level of his anger. His hostility bordered on explosiveness, and he was hiding something. I saw it in his eyes. But what? He had the opportunity in Flora's case to murder her. His motive could be money, if she had life insurance. But was he the type of man who'd kill his wife? And if so, I needed to be more cautious than ever. A man who'd murder his own wife wouldn't think twice about taking me out if I got too close to the truth.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Are you curious about what happens next? Be sure to hit subscribe and tune in next Tuesday to find out. If you're enjoying the Cat Clayton Mysteries podcast, I would appreciate if you would rate and review so that other listeners can discover the podcast as well. Thank you for listening. Until next week, stay happy and sleuth on, my friends.